MetroLink Board of Directors meeting, July 26, 2019.
If anybody needs any assistance, please let me know. And there are a number of others in the room that are also CPR and first aid qualified that will assist. Exits in the event of emergency are at both ends of the building. They're marked with a white placard, and it explains the evacuation procedure. We will meet at the front part of the parking lot of the hotel, is where you either valeted or checked in, and we will get a head count out there. I will not leave this room until everybody in this room has vacated, and I'll make sure that we have a head count before we leave. We did experience some earthquakes recently, so you always got to be prepared for an earthquake. In the event of earthquake, get under the table, protect your head, and we will exit through the stairways down to the parking lot after the earthquake is over. And one thing to always remember, do not come back in the building until emergency personnel has cleared the building to come back into. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome you here today, and I kind of ask you, as I rarely do, to keep your cell phones at hand because they're going to be needed, but if you could kindly turn off your ringer because we won't need that today. We also have a large room and the audio is difficult, so if anybody wishes to speak, kindly raise your hand. You'll find microphones around the room, and we kindly ask you to use those. We'll also be continuing as board members to identify our name when we make a motion or a second so that when Carrie does the minutes later, she can do an appropriate job because many of us surprisingly sound alike on tape. It's now my pleasure to call this meeting to order. This is the July 26th meeting of the MetroLink Board, and kindly ask you to join us now to pledge to our nation's flag. We kindly stand, face the flag, place your hand over your heart, and repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Madam Secretary, would you kindly call the roll?
Brian Humphrey.
Here.
Aaron Ajarian.
Here.
Catherine Barger. Paul Kokorian.
Here.
Hilda Solis. Walter Allen.
Here.
Roxana Martinez.
Here.
Pam O'Connor.
Here.
Paul Phillips.
Here.
Larry McCallan. Alan Wapner.
Here.
John Dutre. Ray Marquez. Andrew Doe.
Here.
Gregory Winterbottom. Doug Chafee. Joe Muller. Andrew Kotyuk. Karen Spiegel.
Here.
Brian Berkson.
Madam Secretary, do we have a quorum?
Yes.
Thank you. Now it's time to open the floor to public comment. We do not have any cards. At this time, any member of the public wish to speak on an item that is not on our agenda. Seeing none, we will close the period of public comment and move to our regular calendar. I would kindly ask staff presenting today to come up to the podium, stand behind the lectern, and address us. Our first presenter will be Ann Louise Rice, speaking to calendar item 6 on page 1 of your agenda.
Good morning. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks. My name is Ann Louise Rice. I'm the Assistant Director of Grants, and I'm here to present item number 6, which is for a contract EN108-14. This is for on-call emergency response, fuel and biohazard cleanup, as well as environmental compliance. And we are asking that the board authorize the chief executive officer to increase our contract funding authority by $200,000. This is a contract with Burns and McDonnell, and so we would be moving to a not exceed contract funding authorization level of $1,949,500. That concludes my report. Unless there are any questions, I would ask for approval.
Any questions or comments? Seeing none, we will entertain a motion, starting with your name. Kokorian, I'll just repeat, has moved the item.
Spiegel.
We have a Spiegel making a second. All right, now Ann Louise has several other items to report, but I want to mention that item 7 on our agenda has been pulled and was properly noticed. Oh, I'm sorry, I should thank you very much for, I didn't have enough coffee this morning. We did have a motion. I would like to go ahead and ask for a vote, please. A voice vote for aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Aye.
Any abstentions? Hearing none, the motion passes. Thank you. And Louise, thank you for your patience with me this morning.
Certainly.
We'll move to item 8, 9, and you continue, don't you?
Yeah, 8, 9, and 10. And number 10 as well. Okay.
Thank you.
Good. So item number 8 is a contract request to authorize the Chief Executive Officer to award to a bench contract number SP 510-20 for financial advisory services to two firms, PFM Financial Advisors and Sperry Capital. The contract term will be for 3 years, and this is for a total not to exceed amount of $450,000. I think I mentioned in my briefings with the when we were doing phone briefings for the meeting earlier this week that there are three main tasks that we anticipate for the first year for this contract. The first one is to be compliant with our grant pursuit under the FTA's expedited project delivery program. There is a requirement to have a financial advisor on board. So that's number one. Number two would be that we are looking at using this person, this bench, to help us with determining financial veracity or capacity, you could say, for the bundled contract. And then the third item is that we are looking to have this bench help us with our hedging program, our fuel hedging program. And so those are some of the first tasks that we expect them to undertake in the first year. So that concludes my report, unless there are any questions.
Go ahead.
Yes.
So my math isn't very good, but you're saying that the report shows,
thank you, $450,000 for the three-year contract,
right?
But I come up with $700,000.
So the spend is not even across the years. So in the first year, we anticipate about $250,000. Mostly for the tasks we described, and then the following years we think they'll kind of ramp down, so it'd be about 100 and 100 for the two following years. So that's why we're at the 450. So it's not a
so
even
that's
spend.
Not what the staff report reflects, though. It shows 200,000 the first year and 250 each for the next 2 years after that.
I think we intended to mean that is a cap for the 2 years after that. So yeah, we see. So we say will be requested through the annual budget or an equivalent process. So in our, maybe we needed to clarify that, but we meant that it could be, we're thinking about a 250 cap over potentially multiple years.
Oh, okay. So it's not 250
to the 3 years.
A year.
No, it is
Got
not.
It. Okay,
that is not,
thank you.
Right. Okay.
Are there any other questions or comments? Welcome you to make a motion if you wish to have that clarified so that it's purposeful to your intent and your comments. So
sure.
That we, seeing no questions or comments, anyone wish to make a motion on this item or offer any clarification?
Phillips
to approve. Doe makes a second. Any objections? Go ahead and vote with an aye.
Aye.
Aye. I'll wake up here. Okay. We have any objections, abstentions? Seeing none, thank you. And thank you very much for that important clarification there. Staff has been directed. And Louise, kindly
yes.
Move forward.
Okay, we're on item number 9. This is the adoption of the revised procurement and contracting policies. And what we're offering here is a set of policies to help guide our procurement and our contracting work. To give you some context, we are anticipating some very large procurements to come under SCORE, right? And those are going to be more of a strategic nature, high dollar value, to build out the vision under SCORE. And so what we're doing here under these policies is to set a nice framework to be able to handle all of our procurements and our contracts. To be able, and furthermore, to be able to offer the agency a way to kind of streamline its business practices as we anticipate these bigger, let's call them transformative kinds of procurements. The ones that in this policy, the ones that you see here are really, you know, kind of cleaning up some policy language. We are careful about modifying our protest procedures, for example. We increase some of the basic thresholds for micro purchases and so on. Those are the smaller dollar values. But what we're really doing here, and I don't know if you can see the slide very well, but we're, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is move toward a CEO's threshold increase from approximately $250,000 for contracts that are $250,000 to go to $500,000. Again, this is to kind of help move toward, focus with the board on those bigger strategic ones. These tend to be, you know, very much commodity-based, kind of low-risk contracts that we're doing. And, you know, I think the even bigger picture here is that, again, I'm not sure you can see the numbers, but we're talking about approximately 7 of these a year. These numbers are based, as we say in our footnote, over a 3-year period, so there's about 22 that would be reduced by going to this higher threshold. And so that's one a year, right? And we're talking $250,000 a year. You multiply 7 times 250, you come up with just a little under $1.8 million annually. Well, our whole budget is $350 million, right? So that is 0.5% of our whole budget that we're talking about. So it's really a small number. So. But it is extremely helpful to us. It streamlines our business. We give our CEO some more authority, and we're in line with this vision of streamlining and modernizing our business practices. That doesn't mean that we take away those items from the board. In fact, we will report quarterly on what the CEO has undertaken under that increased authority. So there's total transparency on that, and that's consistent with the way a lot of commuter rail operators run their business. So I think that's that. With that, we would ask that you would support these policies, and we've mentioned that we are undertaking then implementation through our procedures manual, and that will be followed up shortly. We will have that done in the next month or so. So that concludes my report, unless there are any questions.
Mr. Chair and colleagues, this item addresses more than just the streamlining of our procurement process. If by streamlining we're talking about the different levels of authority being granted to staff, that's one thing, but we also are talking about reducing our manual, the procurement manual, from 150 pages with all of the rules attached down to 11 pages. And when we cut that much out of our rules and policy, I think it's important that the board has to review this carefully. And I would suggest that we defer this matter until after we have a chance to discuss in our workshop the governance structure. This is where the committee concept really comes in handy, that we can refer this to a committee to review the procurement manual and policy, and bring back, and they have a chance to review these items in the 150 pages and see what we can cut out and what we should keep. At least have that vetting process before it goes to the board like this, because right now this is not the venue to go through all of the provisions that have been excised out as part of this proposed new manual. I can certainly go through those one at a time now, but I don't think this is the right time for that, and it's the right avenue for it. I would suggest that we defer this and have a much deeper discussion, at least at the committee level.
Okay, when you say committee level, will be at the EMAC, or are you envisioning some different committee?
We can do that, or I would say probably get volunteers to work on just the procurement manual, sometimes with something like that.
Yeah.
Ad hoc committee, yes.
Ad hoc committee. Okay, very well. I just want to clarify, we're meeting now as by the way, our board meeting, we're not in any terrible rush right now. We can have a good discussion because we cannot begin the workshop until 10 a.m. the way it was noticed. So we'll give you time when we get done here to get back to your room to check out what the case may be. So welcome this important dialogue. Karen?
I just want to share a concern that
by lowering, by increasing the CEO authority, and it's nothing against Stephanie or anybody else being on boards currently, that we have increased that authority has had a backlash from the community. I just want, if we do this going forward, we have to recognize that that may be a negative to some of our constituents that feel that it's an awful lot of authority, that we are responsible with oversight and it doesn't come to us first. So I understand how it streamlines, I understand, but we have to be the prudent ones and make sure that we're doing due diligence to those that put us in the positions we are and that we're the ones in authority. So
thank you. Any other comments or questions at this time? Please, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think further to Director Doe's point, the emergency contracting provision is changed in this. And of course, for this agency, that's an issue of some sensitivity and relevance given, you know, history over the last few years of emergency contracting. And as I'm looking at this, I don't know how this has been changed. I can read the proposed policy, but I don't even know how this compares to our existing policy to the extent that we have an existing policy on that, or if that was just done by action of the CEO under inherent CEO powers or something. So on points like this, it might be valuable to the board, I think, to be able to really compare what we have, what's proposed, what the potential, what the reasoning for that is. The dollar thresholds, I'm actually much more comfortable with. Adjusting the dollar thresholds, I don't think is, I think we can do that today. But some of the other reductions from the procurement policies or changes in them, as I'm sitting here, I can't tell what those are.
We are following state law. We consulted heavily with our attorneys, and they specialize in procurement policies and procedures. And so, these are related to statutes. We don't call them out in this, but they're all grounded in statute. So, that's, you know, especially the emergency procurement one. But, you know, I understand what you're looking for is a kind of an annotated version almost, so that you see the side-by-side, right, differences and the references, yes.
No, I got one here, thank you. Someone else turned it on, I got it. Anyway, no, I appreciate all that, but of course statute just lays out the minimum standards. Mm-hmm. And it's up to the board to decide what's more appropriate for our agency. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that fact, and I agree with my colleagues that it would have been good to be able to compare what we had to what we have now. Mm-hmm. And at least it gives us a starting point as to where we go. So I certainly support the idea of deferring it for further study. There's no time kind of expected to. I mean, you don't need this right away, do you, Stephanie?
Thank you. I appreciate the comments from the board. And of course, think it would be productive to allow a committee to review these. I would just ask for the board to note that there was a recent internal audit finding on the procurement process, and the corrective actions were related to getting revised policies in place. So just ask your indulgence that when the internal auditor provides an update, it will show that this particular area is behind schedule, and just want that noted.
Duly noted. Anyone else wish to offer a comment or have a question? I would just like to clarify that many of the things before us today our policy, and people are commenting they don't want to make it personal. The items here today are really about policy, and we have to think beyond Stephanie. We certainly, Anne Louise, we're not questioning your focus. It's legacy. So as we move forward through these things today, understand we're not going to take these things personally. We just look at them as policy. We've understood that we can defer this without any significant issue. We are dark until September. And Don? All right, so we have a motion and a second. Krikorian second. Thank you for that. I'd like to have a voice vote. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Are there any abstentions? The motion passes. Thank you very much. Ann Louise?
Okay, moving on to item 10. This is the adoption of the third-party agreement policy. So we have not had a policy on third-party agreements at this agency in the ever, and so we are putting this before you for consideration. And what this offers is clarification on authority roles here. So for agreements that are entered into with intergovernmental agencies, so other government agencies that are, and this is very specific, that are wanting Metrolink to undertake some work on their behalf, fully reimbursable to Metrolink. So this is not out-of-pocket money, and you might think of some of the items that have come before you. For example, some design service requests for, say, grade crossing improvements or bridge designs or that kind of thing. Again, fully reimbursable. So what we are asking here in this policy is for the CEO to have authority to sign off on those at a $500,000 level. Then the board would authorize at a higher level beyond $500,000. Again, for the ones that our CEO would sign off on, you would get a quarterly report, so you would be seeing those. And finally, as a reminder, these are, again, fully reimbursable. They don't have an impact on the Metrolink budget. So with that, I would ask, I would conclude my report and ask if there are any questions.
Are there any questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Doe moves that item.
Doe moves.
Phillips second.
Are there any abstentions? Okay, seeing none. I should say opposition or abstention. Seeing none, the motion passes. Thank you. Ann Louise.
Okay, thank you very much.
Now move to Ronnie Campbell. This will be item 11, page 30 on your agenda.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Humphrey, members of our Metrolink Board of Directors. Today, the board is being asked to adopt the proposed revisions to Finance Policy 1.2, which provides policy direction on budgetary control and reporting in an effort to streamline approvals and to clarify roles and responsibilities. In reviewing the current policy, we found that the policy contained a combination of policy and procedure. So in an effort to extract the procedural portion from policy language, the revised policy now contains the following sections: budget control, budget transfer, where we provide policy statements on how to enact operating budget transfers, as well as transfers within the capital program, or oftentimes referred to as a project budget reallocation. There's a section that focuses on budget amendments. It's on page 40, where it describes the four various types of budget amendments that we would bring before the board. There's a section on budget authorization and carry forward, as well as a section on budget reporting and forecast, concluding the revised policy with a definition of terms. The extracted sections that are procedural in content will be included in department procedures, and which will reside within the Office of CFO as a standalone document. With that, I'll conclude my comments and entertain if there are any questions.
Questions or comments? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion. Phillips moves.
Doe second.
Doe second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstained? The motion passes. Thank you very much. We now move to page 43 of your agenda, item 12, the sale of decommissioned legacy locomotives, and Justin Fornelli.
Good morning. This item is requesting that the board delegate authority to the CEO to auction off up to 27 decommissioned legacy locomotives. As you'll recall, as part of the F-125 Tier 4 project, the AQMD funding on that project requires that we destroy the engine of our legacy units, legacy locomotives. And so what we're doing is the remaining hulk or the locomotive body, we'd like to sell those off. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments? Does this process, go ahead, please. Spiegel moves, Doe seconds, and we have a question.
Okay, so I noticed that part of this item deals with the AQMD's requirement that any decommissioned locomotives be, I guess, destroyed. Does that just apply to our agency, or can we sell it to somebody else and they can use it? I mean, I guess I'm missing what the purpose of this
is. It applies to the engine In the locomotive itself. So we are destroying the existing engines in the locomotives, so then the remaining hulk, as we call them, can be sold off and they can be repurposed by other agencies.
Okay, so that's done prior to the sale then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. I had a quick question, if I could. Do we completely debrand these items before they go out? We remove all Metrolink markings?
We have not. We've sold five of these previously, and they still had some, you know, Metrolink marking on them, but that's something we could...
I don't wish to expend any extra money on something that's going out, but when these things are left in a siding somewhere by somebody with hopeful dreams and people pass by these somewhere in the country, our brand is important, and there may be, I will ask for maybe some internal discussion about what's best, what's reasonable, what's prudent about protecting our brand and such.
We'll definitely look into that.
We have a motion, a second.
I'm sorry, just another question. Justin, do we have any idea what the market value of these things are, approximately?
Yes, it's around $70,000. That's what we sold the last, the first five units was $70,000 apiece.
That's interesting to know. You're always full of facts, Justin, and we appreciate that. What does one do with one? Well, maybe they turn into a hotel somewhere. We never know. They're doing that with freight containers, so. Okay. Any other questions or comments? We have a motion. Justin, thank you very much for your presentation today and for your hard work. We spoke today about having items before us, but we have to look at policy and not make it personal. And we have another item here, and we're open, and we're out front on this. And item 13 is Carrie Holman's going to open on this, but this is about board member approval for travel. And as we look at this and talk about this, we understand that this is not personal, people's vote. It's just how we will apply policy in making this happen, because it is somewhat precedent-setting. Carrie?
Good morning, Chair Humphrey and members of the board. Today, item number 13 is a request to approve travel for Director O'Connor. Per our board-approved policy on travel for board members, prior authorization for specific travels are required by the board, and Director O'Connor has requested to attend two conferences with the American Public Transportation Association. One is actually this upcoming weekend, the Sustainability and Multimodal Planning Workshop, and then the APTA Annual Conference in October, which has been renamed to the Transform Conference. So we look to the board for direction on this request.
I'm going to pass the microphone over to Pam to answer any questions that she may have. Pam, I just want to affirm I did read the board item, and I want to thank you for offering those personal statements. Do we correctly understand that everything there is your verbiage and how it's accurately portrayed of how you're going? You also mentioned that you'll be using Airbnb to control your costs. Go ahead, and I'll be happy to, if you want to elucidate.
Right. Well, thank you. The board policy for Metrolink is that if you have a home agency, they pay for your travel. I'm an alternate without a home agency. Actually, Metrolink is my home agency. So, excuse me. So, per the policy set forward by the board a few years ago, I need to do the request to the whole board. Just one thing too, I stated here rationale for going. Hopefully, you've had a chance to read that. And as Brian had noted, one of the things I've always been very cautious on, as I've attended APTA conferences for through other agencies, is to be very cognizant of the fact that it's a public agency funding it, and that frugality really needs to be the mantra. So I work with whoever is the person at the agency to find the most cost-effective things, such as accommodations. And for example, for the sustainability conference, I've identified a private room that, with staying in the room and some ground transportation, would hover around $100 a night. So again, rather than staying at a hotel that would cost hundreds of dollars, I'm very well aware of that. So I would be attending the conference representing Metrolink. I would be getting information that I can bring back and share with the agency, folks here at the agency, and I would be keeping a very close eye on the dollars that are spent and do a full accounting on the way back. So I hope you will support me in that endeavor.
Pam, thank you very much, and I want to thank you for asking. There's nothing wrong, nothing that this board and its members cannot ask and that we cannot bring forward. And we have some comments or questions.
Thank you. Just a question going back to the policy itself, because I didn't realize this. So all travel has to be approved by the board, or can the chair and vice chair travel without approval by the board?
Yes, so Excuse me. According to our policy, which is listed on pages 1 and 2 of the board report itself, the chairman, the vice chairman do not need to get pre-approval to travel to APTA conferences, and especially if there's like a legislative need to travel to Washington, D.C. last minute or a hearing, they do not need to seek that pre-approval. This is for all the rest of the board members serving in any capacity.
And this, if I'm not mistaken, Carrie, is the first time in our history we've addressed it, this particular issue?
That's correct.
We were looking for precedent to understand. If I may further clarify, when we talk about travel, that includes round-trip travel, lodging, and conference registration? Is this what was being requested?
Yes.
Okay, all right, all three. The word travel can be kind of generic sometimes. Any other questions or comments?
So are we looking to actually bring back an item to amend the policy that those members of the our authority board that are not members of a home agency, their travel expenses can be covered by the board if pre-approved?
I would turn to Don, but we have policy. We're not, the item agenda item is not to alter policy, and we can do that in the future. We have one before us.
I don't think an amendment is required. I think under the existing policy, it just requires board approval for someone other than the chair or vice chair. So they're putting that to you as an approval item within the existing policy.
So if I understand correctly, Don, we look to the current policy as providing the agenda as a guidance document, or just so we're aware before we make our decision subjective on how we interpret the policy?
Under the existing policy, you have the discretion to approve an alternate taking this seminar.
Okay, very well. Any comments or questions? We have a motion for the item. Do we have a second? We have a motion by Krikorian, a second by Doe. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstaining? I'll show myself as abstaining on this. Okay, Pam, congratulations. I'll just close in offering, because we're not tight on time at the moment, besides getting back to our rooms. Your work with APTA is legendary. Your work on the Big Blue Bus, we appreciate you being out there. I'm hoping that in the future, as we look at this policy at a future meeting, we can clarify when people are going forward as ambassadors, which you certainly are, versus when they go forward as emissaries. You're not going to learn and to bring back education and knowledge to us, but you're also taking something on behalf of and formally representing Metrolink when we go to these meetings, so that you're truly an emissary and not just building in your experience as an ambassador. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. Is that the first time Carrie has ever done a presentation to the board like that? We have a reputation. I think she has to buy ice cream for everybody. Isn't that how that works when that happens? Okay, it's now time to move to item 14, the approval of our meeting minutes from June 28th. Anybody questions or comments, any corrections? I'll entertain a motion. Doe moves the item. And Spiegel second?
Yes.
Okay. Any objections? Any abstentions? All in favor? Oh, please, comments? We have two abstentions? Okay. Three. Raise your hands, please. So Carrie King. Anybody abstaining? Okay. We have three abstentions. And we have anybody up in opposition? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Passes. And now we move to the most important part of our gathering here, the Chief Executive Officer's report.
Good morning, Board. I just wanted to give a couple of highlights on some activities that have occurred since we last had our board meeting in June. I think I have a, are you going to do this? Oh, okay. So on July 16th, we held our annual summer safety event. I want to thank Director O'Connor representing the board at that event. It's a great opportunity not just to mark the beginning of the fiscal year, but to reinforce how safety is a core value at Metrolink. So we had about 140 employees attend that event that really tries to highlight safety. It was also an opportunity for me to host an all-hands meeting with the employees. And I introduced three new members of our executive team. Todd McIntyre, that some of you met yesterday, is our new Chief Strategy Officer. He started last week. He will not, oh, there, he's still here. Okay, he won't be able to join us for the workshop because he will be representing Metrolink at the 2028 Olympic Committee transportation element. So Metrolink has a seat at that table, but they have a meeting today at noon. Todd's background, he's worked for the Federal Railroad Administration. He has worked for transportation agencies in Northern California, and most recently comes to Metrolink from working in DC with DDOT. Eric Hosey will be our new chief operating officer. He starts on Monday. He has both freight railroad experience and passenger rail experience. Most immediately, he comes to us from Amtrak and is very familiar with Metrolink service as well as Losan service because he serves as a key executive overseeing those operations. And then I've asked Daryl Maxey to take on a role as our chief mobilization officer. Daryl has been a dedicated employee and has always stepped up for Metrolink in key moments in our history. Most notably, after the Chatsworth event, when this board made it a laser focus to implement PTC, Daryl stepped up and led us being the first agency in the country to successfully implement our positive train control. We're asking him to step up now, and that is with this big bundle operating maintenance contract. Many of you know the significance of this effort. It's going to be transformative for this agency, and because we're trying to bundle four big efforts, operations and maintenance, rail right-of-way, signals and communication, to do that when we're an operating railroad dispatching 50,000 trains a year, that's a significant effort. And so Daryl has agreed to focus on that as well as some special projects related to our central maintenance facility. So as we move forward, I will be announcing other members of the executive team. This is consistent with the presentation I made to the board in April as a result of my 90-day findings. And we hope to have the entire executive team in place by our next meeting in September. The second item I wanted to highlight as a result of improvements is a texting feature. And I believe it was Director Wapner in past board members has talked about the importance to have a simple texting feature to provide to our customers. So we now have a texting feature in place where people can call and text directly to our security operations center for non-emergency security or safety concerns while they are on the train. So we're pleased that this program has gone into effect. When a customer texts our security operations center, a dispatcher can either contact a conductor or law enforcement depending on the issue. And so staff is printing the signs that are on the PowerPoint in English and Spanish, and they will be installed in multiple places throughout the train. The next update is on one of the most exciting ones that I mentioned last night at dinner is really the Redlands groundbreaking event last Friday. We now have a new system map as a result, because in 2 years, SBCTA will have completed construction of this 9-mile extension from San Bernardino to Redlands, where, while Omnitrans will offer more frequent service between San Bernardino and Redlands, Metrolink will be operating one round trip when that opens from Redlands all the way to Union Station, a one-seat ride. So we're really excited about that. Many of you know the challenge with traffic in this region. Well, one of the most difficult areas is traveling between San Bernardino and Redlands. So we're excited about that and what that means as we look to continue to transform Metrolink and make Metrolink more accessible to Southern California. And with that, that completes my update.
Thank you very much, Stephanie. Appreciate that. Do you members, board members' comments at this time? Wish to offer any statement, comment, thoughts, beliefs? I have nothing to add, so I'll close the chair's comments then, and we'll kindly adjourn this meeting. We'll start again in just a few short minutes. The coffee recycling stations are down the hallway, and if you need to check out or take care of anything else, please do so. I kindly ask you to come back. Two things. Bring yourself back ready to hit the ground running, and please bring your cell phone back with you, but you can turn the ringer off because we're going to be using that device during our upcoming meeting. So please enjoy your break. We'll see you in a few minutes. Thank you.